being quiet and honest with yourself, to really hear what's coming to the surface, even if it scares the pants off of you, even if it seems massive, even if it doesn't feel attainable right now.
Diana, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here. How fun is this? You got to come and chat with me about your work, and now you've given me the lovely opportunity to come and do the same on your show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's your turn now.
I was going to say, it's slightly nerve-wracking because I like being on the other side. There's way more control there. Whereas here, who knows what's going to happen?
This is how I felt last week that we showed. I was a guest in your podcast. So thank you for that. This is how we met. And I was like, I need to invite you in my podcast because you have some very interesting things to talk about. This is how I felt last time.
I appreciate that. And so the tables have turned. Let's do this.
First of all, if you want to present yourself, say a little bit about you, who you are, what you do.
So I call myself a curious human, which is basically a label to not label myself. I don't know. I'm by day a design educator and an educator in the print space, which is kind of a niche place to live. And then by night, I have a podcast. And sometimes those two things intersect, like the way you and I met. You were a guest in my typography class, which was really fun. The other thing I like to say is that I help kind of people take their right and left brains and put them together to match that with their kind of entrepreneurial hearts to make something and put it out into the world and do fun, creative things. Yeah. So that's a bit about me, but my day job, I'm a teacher. I'm an educator.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm going to go back to all of those for sure. First question I ask everyone is, what's your goal right now and how far do you think you are to get there?
Mm-hmm. So I have a love-hate relationship with goal setting, I must say. A love-hate relationship. I've always been a goal setter. I'm like type A personality. This is the thing I'm working towards. This is what I need to get done. And I mean, it served me very well in life, that approach. But the older I get, the more I realize that having a really fixed idea of where we're going or where we're trying to go is not always helpful. And it's been neat to see the ways in which one project or one thing or one person that you meet leads to the next series of events that you couldn't have predicted a while ago. So that is the long way of saying I don't really set too many goals anymore, like too many fixed goals. But what I will say, something I'm hoping to do before the summer, is I want to get to episode 200. So it's awesome. A lofty goal, considering I have 26 more to go before I get there. But I've got kind of an exciting series about storytelling lined up for May. And I have some student work that I'm going to be publishing through the podcast. And I have a number of other discussions. So I'm hoping I can make it happen. Episode 200. I'm on your episode will be 174. So I'm hoping to get to 200 by the summer. And then the one other goal I had in mind is I have the absolute wonderful privilege, and it really is a privilege, to be able to take some time off during the summer. I know not everyone has that by any stretch of the imagination. But the last two summers, I've really carved out space in July specifically to not work. And my workaholic, always moving brain that wants to think about the next 17 projects on my list, it's really hard. It has been really challenging to kind of slow myself down and not want to think, because there's so much crossover between work and play for me that it's very hard sometimes to tell one from the other. So that's been something that has been really transformative over the last two summers, which is to take, I call it my summer sabbatical. So July is really meant for my family. I find that it takes a solid 3 weeks for me to dial down my ever-moving brain, but I've been able to do it the last 2 years. So I'm really hoping to be able to carve out that time again. So that's my professional or work goal, and then maybe a more of a personal goal.
That's amazing. That's awesome. So Does your vacation start after 3 weeks? This is what you mean?
Yeah. Well, my brain starts to quiet and I can shift into more of a vacation mode after. It's like, honestly, it's 3 weeks has been, in my experience, what it takes. And then to get back up, ramp back up to work mode is sometimes 3 weeks. So that's like the sweet spot. But it's kind of funny because when my daughter was in daycare a number of years ago, and she was going from being with me all day to being not with me all day, it was 3 weeks that it took her to acclimatize to daycare, which is exactly what one of my friends said. She said it'll take 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so there's something there. There's 3 weeks that it takes maybe biologically to get into a new
routine. I think I heard that before, like 3 or 2 weeks, it takes us to do something. If you want to have a good habit, for example, you need to do it for at least 2 or 3 weeks and then it becomes a habit, something like that.
I believe that.
Yeah. But it's awesome to have you in the show. I love your energy and you're colorful and everything. So it's you bring a nice energy to the show. So
I appreciate that.
And it was an honor to be on your show podcast. It's called Talk Paper Scissors. And I'm 174th episode, which is amazing because if I remember correctly, it's like the numbers, 90% of podcast shows that start never go through the 10th episode. 100 and more must be like 1%. So getting to 200 must be like, I don't know the numbers. That's amazing.
Thank you. I don't know the numbers either, but it's really something that started out as a passion project for me and has continued. Like, I very deliberately don't get sponsors. I very deliberately don't have any sort of advertisements. I very deliberately invite people who I genuinely want to chat with, not who I think will create a viral following. Like, that is just... it's the goal for many. It's just not the goal for me. Speaking with interesting people about interesting things, like, that is really what I want to do in that space. And it, because I have guarded it so well over the years to really not be the place where I make a living. Truthfully, it costs me money to host a website and to host the episodes every month. But it's just like this sacred creative space that I love still 4.5 years into it. So it's really a selfish passion project. I could say that I'm putting out all of these episodes into the world, but it's just a beautiful excuse to sit down and chat with people who are doing really cool stuff in the world.
Amazing. Yeah, I think you already answered my next question, which was, how did you manage to get to so many episodes when most podcast shows don't do that? And I guess, what you said, being a passion project and spending money actually instead of making money out of it. Not to mention like the hours that you will spend, because most people will think it's 1 hour episode, but they don't see the editing. They don't see the communication part on bringing on people and all of those stuff. So it's a lot of time and energy from your life to do that. So yeah, you need to love it, I guess, to do so many episodes.
Totally. It's fun. I still find it fun 174 episodes in. There's always parts that will not be fun. Like, I'm very old school with my editing. I mean, I could use a much faster, more automated tool for editing, but I'm like old school freeware GarageBand pulling and dragging, like very, very old school. But even though I don't love that part of the process, when I'm doing it, I'm like, oh yeah, I really do love this part still. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a hassle sometimes to really kind of tweak and play, but it's fun to re-listen to those conversations, and it's fun to have a choice as to what kind of music you incorporate into the episode, or what kind of introduction, or how do you end an episode. So it's kind of this place where there are no rules. I am very inconsistent with how how often I post and or how often I release an episode. Sometimes it's like 5 back to back in a row, and then sometimes it's 5 months where I haven't posted one. So it's really this sporadic creative play space for me, which has been delightful. I love it.
And yeah, because you, I want to ask you, I think the day that we shot my podcast episode, you had another 4 or 5 people the same day. So yeah, I wanted to ask you if that's the case every time. Must be like crazy.
I was exhausted kind of being on for 4 hours straight. But no, so the way that I've been able to kind of weave the podcast in with my teaching is that it is an incredible opportunity to say, like, I feel like podcasting is still novel enough. It's still new enough. 20 years in now, but it still feels new enough that if you say you have a podcast, people are very kind of willing and open to chat with you. So it's been this kind of incredible opportunity whereby in my typography class, students came up with a list. I said in day one, I said, let's come up with a list of dream people we'd want to talk to in the space of design, typography, branding, anything in that realm. And I'll reach out to them. Oftentimes, students are not sure how to cold call. I call it a warm email, but how to cold call, how to reach out to someone, how to approach someone to speak with them. And I mean, yes, this is in the form of a podcast, but this concept of informational interviewing, which is to say, reaching out to someone who you may or may not know to say, can we sit down for 15 or 20 minutes, whether in a virtual space like this or over a coffee in person, whatever. But knowing how to make those connections to genuinely be curious and want to pick someone's brain about what they do and how they do it and where they got there and all of those things, making a genuine connection. So maybe it's a little bit like dating, I don't know, but it's showing students that it's not so hard and it's not so scary to reach out to people who oftentimes do want to help, do want to mentor in a small or a large capacity. So one of the pieces of this kind of all of the guests that I had that day, many of them came from this dream list that students put together, but also I showed them. So in this shared Google Doc with all the students with the dream list there, I copied and pasted my communications with each individual, just kind of how I reached out, the language I used, the specificity around this will take 30 to 45 minutes, the trying to help with any worries about I will provide you some questions ahead of time, and just kind of showing students the way that I have found really works to reach out to someone and showing them that, hey, this is something, again, that is in the context of a podcast right now, but could be a tool that you use throughout your career to make connections that aren't superficial, that are genuine, that are that you never know where something could lead. And it's not just a one-way relationship. It could be that you're helping that person or able to help them at some point, or they're able to help you, or it's just like that, those 15 or 20 minutes where you do have that bit of connection and then you can each go on your way, but you learn a little bit from each interaction. So the long story short story long, however that goes, the 5 back-to-back individuals, it was really this beautiful opportunity in this classroom to show, or to not only speak to many individuals in the type world and get to sit down and interview and have conversations, but also show students the process and show that they could do this too in their careers.
Yeah, I love what you're doing there, what you're teaching them, because it's, I think as a student, you normally go towards the hard skills and you forget about the soft skills. So it's very important what you're doing, because it's the exact same process that they will use for clients, for example. So it's not just for if you have a podcast, it's like if you want someone to work with it, it's going to be the same thing. So yeah, that's very important. Yes.
It's taking a proactive approach versus a reactive approach. It's reaching out to people in ways that are genuine and mutually beneficial. And as you say, reaching out to clients or potential clients, cold calling, it's a very important skill. And while we don't pick up the phone anymore necessarily and make that cold call as we traditionally did in sales, which I used to have to do in my actual sales day job, it's still a very important skill to know how to use technology, know how to use words and communication and be able to make connections quickly to get that to the next stage of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I need to mention that because I love the idea of you had your students in the podcast recording. They were live there, and they could ask questions in the end, which I think it's an awesome idea to have, because when you are like earlier in the career, you ask better questions. When you're further ahead, I think we forget how it was in the beginning. So maybe the questions don't relate so much with the people watching or listening to the podcast. So that's an amazing idea.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so neat. I call them my live studio audience, but really it's our class time and it's students who are in the class. And because we had, 4 hours back to back is a lot to listen to. So yeah, I said, here are all the different guests we have. There's a little brief bio about each, and like come to two or three who you really connect with or feel like they align with what you want to learn, and come and be engaged and ask questions and be curious. And I mean, this is a cool opportunity. So I'm glad you like that idea too.
Yeah. And it's also awesome that your students are picking the guests. Basically, they're giving you a list of who they would like to have on the show, and then they can be there and ask their questions. So yeah, pretty cool.
Thank you.
I have a section in the podcast where I ask three fast random questions.
Let's do it.
You can answer with the first thing that pops in your head, and then you can explain more if you want.
I'm ready.
Yep. So first question is, what's your favorite podcast show?
Okay, that's an easy one. And it is called We Can Do Hard Things with Glennon Doyle. She's the author of Untamed. She's the author of many, many books, but she and her wife and her sister all have this podcast where they talk about hard things, and they bring on guests who are experts in various hard things in life. And it's just like, it's good. It's good stuff.
Okay.
It's my favorite.
Awesome. Yeah. So it's advice is general for your life. It's not just design or something like that. It's
right. Yeah. 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 Okay. I'll be honest that I don't listen to a whole lot of design podcasts.
Yeah.
That's okay. my dirty little secret, but it's truthfully, and this is, I don't know if this is good or bad, but I don't listen to a lot of podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that is partially subconscious, where I'm like, I don't want to listen and know what the kind of traditional format is and know how it's done and conform to that. I think it's a little bit of that maybe. And then I have a couple of favorites and I really just listen to them or to music or to audiobooks. I am a big nonfiction eater-upper. I read all sorts of nonfiction and love it. So I just don't listen to that many podcasts. Anyone, okay? It'll be between you and I.
Okay. But I guess when you create so many episodes, you need to focus on that so you don't listen to other podcasts. You create your own.
We'll go with that. Yes. Great.
Parenthesis, when did you start your podcast? Do you remember how long ago it was?
I remember the date specifically. Cool. November 24th, 2019.
Okay. How do you remember the date? What was it? Something special
about it? My daughter, who is now 7 and a half, that was her her date that she was like, November 24th was her due date given by the doctor. Back in 2016, but I just, November 24th, just like, I don't know, stuck with me.
Awesome.
Stuck with me. Yeah.
That's great.
That's why.
Cool. Second question. What is the simplest advice that is the most important or hardest to follow?
You cannot control what other people think. You can only control the way you react to their actions and behaviors. And that's so hard.
That's so hard
in life and in a relationship, any relationship, friends, partners, whatever. It's hard with kids, right? Knowing that you can't ultimately control another person or another person's thoughts or beliefs or whatever, the way in which those thoughts and beliefs come out through their actions. The only thing that you can control is your reaction to that, which is a hard realization sometimes. Especially when You're a type A personality. I've got four of those living in my house, and it's a lot sometimes. We all want to control each other. Yeah.
I see. Okay. And last question. If you could use only one font for the rest of your life, which one will it be?
Okay, so you're turning my questions back on me, because I always ask type people this, and I actually didn't ask you this, so I'm going to turn it on you as well in just a second. But my answer is Proxima Nova. Proxima Nova is a beautiful, friendly, warm, professional, easy to read typeface. And I had the great honor and pleasure of sitting down with the creator of the typeface, Mark Simonson, for my 100th episode. He agreed to come on. It was a kind of this cool full circle moment where I got to ask him what his kind of desert island typeface, the typeface that if he could only use for the rest of his life, what he'd choose and why. And truthfully, I can't remember what he said, but Proxima Nova is my answer. Now, what is your answer, Chris? What typeface would you choose?
I think I need to go with Futura.
Classic.
Yeah, just because I think it works for text, it works for titles, it works for logos. I can use it everywhere. And I think it's because back then when I started, there's not a lot of Greek fonts. Like there is not a lot of good fonts translated into Greek. So it was one of the good fonts that I could find in Greek. So I started using it, obviously, and I think I'm stuck with it since then.
Yeah, it's a classic. It is geometric, sans serif, works in many, many different places, spaces. I get it. I totally get it.
I will go first to your Domestika course because it's super interesting and it looks very professional, very well shot and everything. It's called Building Creative Confidence. Okay, I got the title right.
You got it. Okay. You got it.
So yeah, do you want to explain what's the course about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had the immense kind of pleasure of working with Domestika on this project. It was really a joy to create this course. It took me out of my comfort zone. I had to use many of the tools that I share in the course about confidence, teaching in a studio in a space with cameras on me that felt very foreign to me. And so it was this kind of wonderful meta moment where I was using all of the tools that I was sharing in real time. It was kind of like this inception moment. Anyway, it's a really fun course that is all about not changing oneself to become more confident. It's not about changing oneself, but it's about kind of changing your perspective on the situation and understanding some of the reasons why we're self-conscious in putting our creative work out there or writing our book or in painting a picture that may or may not be seen in a gallery or maybe just stuck on your fridge at home. So all of these kind of creative, anything that's lumped under creative projects that we work on, what are the things that are holding us back and how do we overcome using mindset to be able to push past and really put our unique things out into the world?
Is it like exercises? Is it theoretical and practical at the same time? Do you give also exercises?
Yeah, exactly. So the way that Domestika courses work is there's a final project at the end that all students in the course can complete. And so the final project is a creative manifesto. So it's basically in any format that you want to create this in. It could be a digitally designed poster. It could be a rap. I don't care. It could be a dance. It could be whatever it is. But you're creating something that reminds you of your unique values, your unique value, your unique viewpoints, your education, your who you are as a person, all of the pieces that make you you, what you bring into the world and what you value in your creative work. So the manifesto is the final project. But then leading up to that, I created a workbook with a number of different exercises. I think it's either 7 or 9. I can't remember right now, but there's a number of different exercises that I developed over the course of many, many, many months with the help of many, many, many creative professionals who gave me feedback and kind of we workshopped things. And my students and my classroom is a beautiful laboratory of experimentation for trying out some of these creative techniques. And yeah, so it's a series of exercises in a workbook, but also with me there kind of walking you through things in an on-demand course format, video course. And it's really fun. It hopefully gets you kind of out of your head in some ways. And it's really, it was really a joy to make. And it's so, so, so cool to be able to go into the course still. I check it every single day, and there's a place for students to kind of contribute to a discussion forum. There's specific prompts and questions if they so choose to answer those. And I respond to every single one because I'm still like, I'm so grateful for the opportunity because I'm seeing the impact, however small, I'm seeing the impact that I'm having of something I shot nearly 2 years ago, and people are still watching and people are still doing the exercises and sharing vulnerabilities and being, it's just a beautiful place. I love, love, love it.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, it's very interesting. Like, I guess like most creatives are not always confident in themselves or their work on stuff like that. So it's a nice course to get, I guess. What's the number one struggle people will face that maybe they cannot get to confidence, basically?
There's a few that come to mind. Number one is this idea of failure and helping to reframe failure as part of the process and not kind of a make or break it thing. Another one is, what was it coming to mind? Perfectionism. Perfectionism's huge, and wanting to make sure that the work we put out into the world is quote unquote perfect, but perfection is an illusion anyway. I mean, especially in creative work, there's very rarely a right and a wrong, a black and a white, a yes and a no. There's much more play in the middle. So, I mean, those are two big ones that I see all the time. And it's interesting too, because I'm someone who has lots of ideas. And so my roadblock to creating something often comes at the end of a project or kind of middle to the end, where I kind of lose steam, and then I've got 16 other things on my horizon that I just want to jump into. Whereas for many others, I'm learning through this course is that oftentimes it's like not knowing where to start, not knowing how to start, looking at a blank page. All of these kind of impediments to starting a project is where their kind of problems lie or confidence issues lie. So I think it can really be at either end of the spectrum in terms of why and how and when people kind of lose confidence in their work.
That's very interesting, the two different mindsets. Any tips on, like, for people that they don't know right now, they want to start something, but they don't know how or when or what to do? Any tips on that?
Ooh, okay. I think if they do a little soul searching, by that, I mean, just really trust your gut. I think a lot of this and what I've learned over the years is oftentimes I know what the right answer is, quote unquote, right answer, or like the next project or something that really excites me. And that's the direction I should go. So I think just kind of being quiet and honest with yourself to really hear what's coming to the surface, even if it scares the pants off of you, even if it seems massive, even if it doesn't feel attainable right now. I think just listening to your gut, if you ask it, hey, what's the next project I should work on? It'll come to you. Even if you don't like it, it'll come to you. And just kind of trusting that intuition, that creative intuition to say, okay, let's take baby steps to get to or work towards a project that I really deeply am passionate about, because you know what your next project might be. What about you, Chris? What's your gut telling you?
For the first one or for now?
What's your next project? What do you really want to work on?
Oh, I think it's a personal project. When I have client work, I will structure it like that's the top of my list, the client work. So in the bottom of my list, it's always my personal projects. So this year, I definitely want to focus on doing personal projects creative, etc. And that's the second question, because I want to go to the second category, because I feel I'm more like you, where I have a lot of ideas. I will start on them, will go to a point, and then how it's called, the signee syndrome. Well, I see that I have the new idea and then I go to that. And I think I always did that as a kid. I was always drawing, and I will get to a good level to the design, and then I will jump to a next illustration because I have the new idea.
So I think that constraint is a very good thing in a project, and whether that's time constraint, whether that is material constraint or budgetary constraint, whatever the constraint is, I don't see constraint always as a bad thing, really. I mean, there's instances where it could be a bad thing, but it can also be used to your advantage. So if you want to really finish up a project, setting a good old egg timer or some sort of timer on your phone, mm-hmm. for even 5 minutes just to get the momentum going, and then commit to that. That's one way to do that. Good old timer. Another way is, so I have recently taken up painting by numbers, and it's not super creative, but it is. I kept getting these ads on social media. It's like relaxing and it'll turn off your brain. I'm like, okay, whatever. I don't know. I got one. Love it. It does that for me. But so here's my recent lady, my paint by numbers lady.
Cool.
Yeah, it's very fun. So, but I am the kind of person who will get halfway through that and see another shiny new paint by numbers thing. And I'm like, oh, I want to do that one instead. So I think just forcing myself to finish one thing before I'm allowing myself to move on to the next is another strategy that I've used that has had some success. And I think just realizing that, again, going back to this concept of perfection, whatever we put out into the world is never, ever going to be perfect. Perfect is not real, because, again, in creative work, there can be 1,000 right answers to the same creative problem or the same prompt or brief that a client gives us. There can be 1,000 right answers and 1,000 ways to do it. So I think just knowing that perfection and trying to achieve a single right answer is not helpful. It's not necessary. And even if your work is less than perfect, I mean, doing more work and doing kind of more creative passion projects and whatever else it is, it I don't want to say waters down the rest of your work, but I mean, with quantity comes quality. And so what you're putting out into the world, even if it's not like the best thing you've ever made, finishing something is way better than not finishing it and trying for it to be perfect, right? Good and done is better than perfect and not done. I think that mentality and that mindset helps me a lot.
I want to go back to Domestika, and because as a filmmaker, I always see the courses that they make, and they always look same brand, amazing background, very, very well shot and professional, where there is other platforms where there's good courses, but because people, they're shooting the course themselves, it doesn't look so professional. So I want to ask you, actually, how this happened. Did you travel to, I don't even know where Domestika is. I think it's Spanish.
Yeah. So they sadly, the studio no longer, that I shot at, no longer exists. They closed down production. I don't know all of the details, but they closed down production of a lot of their North American stuff. Probably 6 months ago to a year ago. But I flew to New York. So right in the Big Apple, and they had a studio there. And yeah, it's a pretty rigorous process. So there were, I think, two or three studios maybe that courses were being filmed at in simultaneously. I worked with a producer at Domestika, and I worked with two filmmakers and a set designer. So it was like way out of my usual day job, where I like schlep all my stuff into class and I'm like, quiet down. Right. It was a very different environment, but it was really neat. And it was also neat to see how rigorous the process was for getting the set approved, for example. So every Domestika course follows the same format in terms of what shot first, second, third, fourth, the set changes. So there's a different set for the trailer than there is for the actual course itself. So when they were swapping over the sets, it was really interesting to see that they basically had a like five different or six different people in the room, all different levels of management, to say like, oh, okay, we need this down a centimeter, we need this up, we need this moved here, and everything was in perfect position. And when they thought it was good to go, they would then send a live feed over to their headquarters in Spain to get the full final approval. So it was like this very, very rigorous process. And it was very cool to be a part of that and see how that works. Because again, that is not my wow. everyday glitz and glamour lifestyle. No way. But yeah.
Do they also interfere with your actual course on like... it should be 10 sections or it should be that long or et cetera, et cetera?
Kind of, sort of, not yes and no. So the format of each course is the same. So I share my influences and kind of explain who I am and where I come from. And then there's kind of the, I can't remember what it's called, but it's essentially the course like structure. Here's how kind of walking people through all the bits of creative confidence and the exercises that I wanted to walk them through. And then it's a course project at the end. So you've learned all these things and then you come to the end and here's the project that you can now work on and show off. So from that perspective, it's very rigorous format that cannot change, but the actual content and the meat in the middle is absolutely completely was up to me, which was really fun and neat to be able to have that creative control. And again, work with my, I call them my creative confidants, but the people who I kind of lean on and rely on, and people, friends who I've made in industry who I very, very much value their thoughts and opinions. And they helped me kind of carve out and really refine what the course was and how I delivered it. So it was lots of fun. It was lots of creative freedom, but also very rigorous kind of production process.
I think that's nice because there is a lot of people that know what to teach and how, but they don't know how to shoot the videos themselves. Yes. Or something like that. How did you, did they invited you to be in Domestika? Did you contact them? How that happened? Yeah.
Good question. So I have a friend, a professional colleague friend who I actually met through this podcast, and he's been on a number of times. His name is Chris Rouleau, and he was actually the guest after you were last week. Yeah. So I had him back. I said, Chris, come back and talk. So he is Toronto based. And anyway, he and I just happened to be on a call about something else. And he mentioned that he just had shot a Domestika course. And I said, oh my gosh, that would be my dream project. How much fun is that? He said, I'm actually getting on a call with them later today. I'll see what they say. And so one thing led to another where they reached out to me. Funny story is they got an old email address that actually was not active anymore. And I don't even know, like in the depths of the internet, they found this email address that was no longer active. And so they'd been reaching out to me a few times and I just hadn't gotten any of their emails. So I guess finally they thought, okay, let's try a different email address. And so they said, this is the last time we're going to reach out. If you want to move forward, here's what you have to do. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is this? So I'm scrolling back through all of their previous emails that I hadn't received. Anyway, thankfully I got that last email and it kind of worked out from there. And funny story is they pay you in advance. It's kind of like a book deal. So it's not a significant amount of money, but it's a little bit of money up front. And then there's a royalty that you are paid. That's a small percentage of every course sold. When you get back up to that advance dollar, whatever it was, anything after that, you're paid out kind of monthly in a royalty situation. So because I hadn't been responding to the emails, they kept upping the advance every time to kind of sweeten the pot, not knowing that I wasn't receiving the emails. So by the time it got to me and I finally got it, I was like, yep, let's do this. So it was kind of a funny thing that happened. Yeah.
That's a good strategy.
Yeah. Just don't answer any emails. Don't get the emails.
Yeah.
But no, it worked out. And then kind of one thing led to another. It moved really quickly. I had the opportunity to pitch them the idea of what I wanted to do. They originally were kind of looking at creative process, productivity, something, a course in that realm, which I think I could have I could have done, but this was far more interesting and kind of a gap that I saw in their course offering. There were lots and lots of people teaching courses about productivity and their process and all the rest, but I didn't see a whole lot about kind of this framework and the psychology of creative process and kind of overcoming some of those roadblocks that were standing in your way. So I pitched it and they liked it. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Awesome. Any plans for a second one?
I would love to, but because they've closed down their, like, I really don't even have any contacts anymore because they kind of closed down their North American production. But I have a Google Doc with about six different courses that I would love to pitch them again. We'll see. We'll see if it happens, but time will tell.
And you work, your main job is to teach at the University of Toronto?
So it's not University of Toronto. It's Toronto Metropolitan University. And it's a bit confusing.
It's different. It's a bit confusing. I didn't even know it's different. Yeah.
No, totally fine. We used to be called Ryerson University. We had a name change about 2 years ago, and now it sounds very similar to the well-established institution of University of Toronto, but it's Toronto Metropolitan University. It's fine. TMU.
TMU, that's easier.
TMU, there we go.
Awesome. But you also teach online. You have your Domestika course. You do so many things. And I wanted to ask you what's, like, I always see the university and online courses like a different thing. So one versus other. So you are in both. I wanted to ask you about your taking it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they can absolutely be a complement to one another. It's interesting. So I, for years and years and years, have my goal, speaking of goal setting, coming full circle, my goal has always been to become a full-time tenure track professor and tenured professor. So someone who would be working as a researcher and as a teacher and educator within the university. And probably about 6 or 7 years ago, so I've been teaching since 2012 full-time. 6 or 7 years ago, it just finally, I came to the realization after having applied to tenure track positions two or three times at that point, and just kind of seeing and knowing the system and being a part of the system, that it just was not going to be a thing for me. Like, I just need to come to grips with the fact that I need a PhD. I have a master's degree, but I don't have a PhD. So I need a PhD if I want to pursue this really kind of seriously. And with my young family, I'm just not willing at the moment. Like, it's not, I'm not in a position to be able to do it and to do it justice. And it's not worth kind of the stress of trying to do it all for me. So yeah. So once I kind of came to that realization of I will be a contract faculty member, meaning I will only teach, I have full-time hours, which I'm very, I feel very grateful for having, but I don't do research for the university. And what that really allows me to do, the flip side of not being full-time tenured professor, is that I can explore other avenues and I can host this podcast and have it live as a separate entity, really not tied to the university. And I can have Domestika courses that kind of live and breathe as their own separate thing. So it's really what I once saw as something that was holding me back or almost a failure. Like, if we're talking about failure, something that felt like failure to me was not kind of getting this big stamp of approval, this job title from the university, has turned into something that is completely opportunistic and exciting. And I'm very grateful for that. So yeah, I think university, there's absolutely a time and a place for in-person learning, but I think there's huge benefits as well to on-demand, asynchronous video content, learning online, learning at your own pace. There's benefits to both. And so I think where universities really need to kind of understand their place in the future of education when there are so many options to students these days is to understand the true value that they bring, which is in-person, collaborative, bringing people together. I really think that the large lecture format, getting 100 or 200 or more people in a room and talking at them for 3 hours, is dead. And that's probably kind of controversial. I'm glad that maybe you don't have a whole lot of academics who listen to this necessarily, but I mean, it's a bit of a controversial thing to say that the traditional lecture format that universities have built themselves on for so many years, I mean, I really think is in many ways dead. It feels impersonal. It feels in many ways irrelevant when you're able to get similar information, maybe even better information in some cases, from various places online that you can learn at your own pace, and you can learn from very kind of highly curated, engaging people that are talking directly to you. I don't know, I'm blathering here, but I think there's a place for both. I think that totally online learning has disadvantages. Totally in-person learning has disadvantages. But together you can kind of help bridge that gap, and there are benefits to both.
Mm. What's the biggest disadvantage in online education?
Just, I think, lack of community. I mean, oh, okay. I think that discussion forums and kind of different avenues to come together in smaller groups or like-minded communities is helpful in courses like My Domestika course, but it's not the same as having a conversation, having a spontaneous discussion, having an instantaneous insight when someone says something that sparks something in your brain. I mean, that kind of very real in-person neural connection when you're sitting down, even in a virtual format like this, it's far different in an online course where you don't have that same type of interaction with other humans. I think that's the biggest downside.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I have been into university for graphic design, but I feel that I learned way more online by myself. And the one thing, I always feel like I didn't really need that diploma, for example. No one asked me for it when I was looking for a job. But the one thing that I kept was the people that I made there, the friends that I make. So yeah, definitely agree with what you said. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that'll be the challenge for universities moving forward, is how do we compete with this plethora of choice online? It's not even how do we compete, but how do we complement, or how do we shift the large style lecture format that maybe doesn't work anymore? That especially for our school, that's very much a commuter school. People are having to travel half an hour, an hour, 2 hours sometimes to actually come and sit in a seat and listen passively to someone at the front of the room going da 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 da. That needs to change, in my opinion. There needs to be a change.
I want to also ask you about your students. What's the biggest success story maybe you could share, like one of your students?
Ooh, okay. So there's all sorts of, okay, so here we go. Can we get into this just a little bit? I know we're probably running short on time, but
that's fine.
One of the other pieces of the creative confidence stuff that, as I was developing the course and as I was really digging into what does it mean to boost one's creative confidence, this concept of success kept coming up again and again. And like, how do we define success, and how does the external world around us kind of push success on us? Whether it's through likes, salary, job title, whether it's like very traditional metrics that are kind of easy to quantify or easy to see. And so one of the things that I began doing that became a very transformative thing for me, and hopefully for others, is to help kind of redefine success by asking ourselves, like, what is it that we consider success? Like, above and beyond money and title and, I don't know, position in society and likes and followers and all the things, like, what is it really that defines success for us? So traditionally successful students, traditional success, I would say, I think I taught her for maybe 2 years, and I had this much to play in her journey, but she's a content creator originally from Toronto. She now lives in California. Lauren Remacki, Laura DIY. I don't know if you know her. She's got like 4.5 million followers, and she's running the world doing her stuff, which is very cool to see. There's so many successes, small and large. One of my former students who has turned into a colleague with me who's turned into a very good friend of mine, now is kind of getting into the world of professional drag artistry, which is super cool to see, and doing like his stuff there. There's so many students doing brilliant things, game design. I am lucky enough to teach in one course in the Master of Digital Media program at our university too. So most of my time is spent in the design and graphics and typography world, but I get to teach this one course called Interdisciplinary Innovation, which is how do we all get together in a room? We all come from very different backgrounds, very different skill sets. How do we make something bigger than each of our individual selves? Like, how do we get along? How do we communicate? How do we really leverage our unique talents and abilities? And so I've had the great pleasure of teaching that course. This is my seventh time right now. And the students who come through that program are incredible. And like, there's too many to name individually as to all of the success that they have seen. But that's my long, short answer.
Okay.
Can we do a quick exercise? And it's actually one of the ones in the Domestika course, but can you and I do it together?
Sure.
about reframing success.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So grab a piece of paper. Do you have a piece of paper there?
Yep.
Okay. So in the middle of your piece of paper, I would like you to draw, hold on, let me grab, I'd like you to draw a circle. Okay.
Okay.
And inside of the circle, I've mentioned this already, but I'll say it again, but I'd like you to write creative cousins. Creative cousins.
Okay.
So what this exercise is all about is figuring out who in the world we look up to and respect and connect with and identify with from a creative standpoint. And I won't give the rest away, but I want you to kind of create a few spokes. So I'll show you a few lines off of your center circle. Okay. So creative cousins. And at the end of those lines, I would love for you to write down the names of those people. So they could be people in your family. They could be people on, I don't know, who you follow, who have a very large following on Instagram. They could be celebrities. They could be your grade 3 teacher. It doesn't matter. Just people mm-hmm. who you really look up to and maybe even aspire to be from a creative standpoint.
Yep.
So I have, for example, on my list, I've got my kids. Mm. I've got you. Let's put you on the, there we go. I've got Amos Kennedy, who is this incredible printmaker and just like badass guy. I have another, he's a children's author and all around like kindness spreader, Brad Montague. And then I have an educator here, Ana Rita Moraes, who actually created this poster. This calendar behind me. Yeah, she does these large scale calendar projects that support students. So anyway, those are the people on my list. But the second part of this exercise, so create a few more spokes or lines from each of the people.
Okay.
And write down why that person is on your list.
I already knew the answer for all five. I don't have five. But if I think of the people that I'm looking for, I know why all of them are in my list.
Okay, why? Tell me.
So it's all of them is people that either got into a bad situation or from the start of their life, they were like in a very difficult circumstances where most people will not succeed, but not only they thrive. So
okay.
This is the kind of people I look up to.
Yeah. Usually. Yeah. So looking at like words that I would associate with that, something like resilience or grit or overcoming challenges, overcoming obstacles. So yeah, put some of those types of words down for these people. I'm going to fill in a few of mine as well, but this is really knowing those words and your reasons for looking up to them. Is really important, which I'll get to in just a second. I'm going to add a few here.
Yeah, I think I added it's kind of similar, all of them. Resilience, as you said, overcoming challenges, conquer obstacles, striving over hard times, giving. I'm not sure if that's the correct word, but yeah.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's really great. Mine, very kind of similar, or I've started to kind of bring up these words. So for you, I mentioned that you're curious and you're hardworking. My kids are totally experimental and really proud of the work they create, which I completely admire. Anna Rita, she's thoughtful. She's really innovative in her approach. Brad Montague, he's super generous with his, and vulnerable. That's another one I'll put down there. He's vulnerable with what he shares with the world. He's curious, he's generous. And then Amos Kennedy, I wrote, he's the printer, the letterpress printer. He's also experimental, also curious. So the key thing with this activity or this exercise is once you start to identify who it is you look up to from a creative standpoint, and then really nail down some words that help you articulate why it is you look up to these people, you can start to see trends and patterns. So what are some things that you are coming up again and again? So I think you had this, right? The kind of resilience and the overcoming obstacles. For me, it's curiosity. For me, it's experimentation. Mm-hmm. For me, it's vulnerability, experimentation. I had that. Innovation. So some of these words can now become your new goal, your new starting point, your new kind of way in which you can know you've succeeded. If you start to look at a project and you go, okay, was I being really experimental? Did I come in with a mind frame of curiosity? Did I explore all avenues? Was I really vulnerable with what I put out into the world, knowing it may not be received in a super positive way with 1,000 likes? Mm-hmm. And am I still okay with that? Yeah, absolutely. So these become the new metrics of success, and they are different for every single person on the planet. It is no longer this blanket, again, followers, salary, job title. It becomes much more nuanced, much more, you're kind of bringing the invisible, making it visible, and finding those things that really can be a much greater metric of success for your work.
Okay. Thank you for the exercise. That's very interesting.
You're welcome.
And I think it's very helpful that you do it at the same time and you give examples. But because I the moment that you said curiosity and hardworking was like some of them that I would put down on some of them, but I didn't think about it. So I definitely going to go do that again on my own time when I'm more like focused. And I think I'm going to share it with you later on.
Amazing. And this is, again, it can be a living, breathing thing that changes all the time. So make a quick note in your calendar to revisit it every 6 months or every year or whatever it is, and say, like, okay, how is this changed? How is this shifted? Who am I now really inspired by or look up to or kind of want to emulate in my work? And what about them makes them that way in my mind? And then how can I better align my values with my own kind of measure and understanding of what success means?
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, because I do that actually every year. I go through the goals that I had and see if what I have achieved, what I still want to achieve, and what's going to shift to something else. So I can definitely add this to the exercise. That's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you. Honored to be in your circle that you added my name. Thank you so
yes,
much.
Yes, really and truly. I'm not just putting that down. That's like you are someone who does so much incredible work. The amount of work, the quantity of work, and the quality is wonderful. And yeah, it's been great meeting you virtually over these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, me too. And I think for everyone listening or watching this, they should go through that exercise if they want. And they can share in the comments if they like. What are the results?
I'd love to hear it.
And we're almost in the end. Where's the best place for people to find you?
Yeah, good question. So the best place for people to find me, there's kind of three places. And they all interlink and like connect back to one another. So you really just need an in on one and then you'll find the others. But the three are my website. So talkpaperscissors.info. You can find all of the episodes to my podcast there, as well as some bonus extras and all of the show notes and that sort of stuff. On Instagram at talkpaperscissors. And then I started last year a Substack. So I've been doing, writing has always been part of my kind of professional life, dating back 16 years ago. I wrote for a magazine for a number of years. And so I've kind of, things have shifted in my writing, but I continue to write. A lot of it has to do with creative confidence and topics surrounding making friends with failure and understanding, again, kind of changing up the conversation around what success means and all of those bits and pieces. So my Substack is simply Diana Varma, DianaVarma.substack.com. And like my podcast, it's free forever. I don't want to, it's my sacred creative space. So you're welcome to follow along and you can get all of the everything for free.
Awesome. I will have all the links also in the description, as well as the Domestika course if someone wants to check this out.
Thank you.
And I also ask in the end, if you have anyone to shout out, anyone to that will be a good fit for the podcast, anyone that I should bring maybe the next episode.
I have so many, but do you have any sense of someone in brand identity design, someone in typography, someone in printing? What category are we talking here?
As long as he or she is a good person, I would love to have a conversation with them.
Okay, I have to throw it out there because he is an absolute legend in the world of printing and just like doing his thing is the person on my list here, Amos Kennedy. There he is. Amos Kennedy, I had the pleasure of sitting down with him. When was it? Not that long ago, a few months ago. And he is just an incredible person who gives back constantly to the community and just is such a cool character in the world of print. He's a wonderful man.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I would love to meet him and speak with him. Is there anything I should have asked you and I didn't?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I feel like you have great energy. I feel like we could have spoken all day about things, but no, I think that this has been great. It's been really fun. I appreciate it.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much. And you're always welcome to come back in the show whenever you want.
Thank you, Chris. And likewise, come on back and chat about some new projects.